Welcome to Power Play. I'm Evan Solomon. On our program today, back of the vaccine line.
Yesterday, the Prime Minister admitted the beginning of the end of the pandemic starts later in Canada.
We are working to ensure that Canadians have vaccines as quickly as possible.
Just how long will Canadians have to wait to get the coveted vaccine should Canada have signed licensing agreements to produce doses here at home? The Intergovernmental Affairs Minister, Dominic LeBlanc, joins us in moments as we look for answers on that. We will then get reaction from the two opposition health critics. And then, delays, confusion, and a damning report from Ontario's Auditor General elicits an angry response from the Premier. Check this out.
I have some serious, serious problems with this report. To say that Dr. Williams wasn't leading this response, it just isn't right. It's actually wrong. This does nothing but undermine our entire health team.
Ontario's Auditor General slams the province's pandemic response, calling it delayed, confusing, not even led by the Chief Medical Officer of Health, Dr. David Williams. But the Premier, as you just saw, says, no, it's wrong, it's riddled with inaccuracy. So what was not true? Does Canada's biggest province deserve such a low grade? We ask the author of the report herself, the Ontario Auditor General, Bonnie Lissick, will join us. Plus, a COVID Christmas?
As much as we all want to spend time with family and friends, we must continue to do our part to stop the spread of COVID-19.
So what is the plan? Quebec is letting families gather for 4 days only. Ontario still wants households to stick together. Who's getting it right? Will Canadians listen to the patchwork of restrictions across the country? What will you do in the holiday season? Tom Mulcair joins on the press gallery to break down the holiday messaging. This is Power Play. Let's get to the players. Look, first came hope. A vaccine is near. That's good, right? But yesterday, a discouraging admission from the Prime Minister. Canada will have to wait for other countries to give their citizens the vaccine first. They produce it there before Canadians can expect theirs. Why is that the case? Justin Trudeau says we lack domestic production capacity. If we did, why didn't Canada secure a licensing deal for vaccines to be made here? What will this mean for the big question? This is the main thing. When will a vaccine get to you? Will we have to watch people in the UK, in the United States, in Australia, and other countries get vaccines months before we get any? Let's bring in the Intergovernmental Affairs Minister, Dominic LeBlanc, to find out. Joining me now is Minister Dominic LeBlanc. Good to have you on the program, Minister. Look, you've seen Question Period today. Vaccines is the big issue, and I want to start with access. Countries like Australia, Mexico, Brazil, when they signed deals with AstraZeneca and for that vaccine candidate, they also signed licensing agreements to produce those domestically. For example, India is already producing millions of doses that will be distributed the day that vaccine gets the green light. Did Canada sign any licensing agreements to domestically produce that particular vaccine?
Evan, AstraZeneca is a good example. That company's manufacturing facility closed in the 2007 to 2011 period when Mr. Harper was prime minister. Many of the biomanufacturing companies that had significant facilities in Canada, like AstraZeneca, like GSK, like Johnson & Johnson, closed their facilities in Canada during the Harper years. So that capacity doesn't exist in Canada now, the domestic manufacturing. That's why we aggressively pursued contracts to bring those vaccines to Canadians as quickly as possible. But at the same time, we're also investing in rebuilding that manufacturing capacity so that later this year and next year, if there are annual doses required, subsequent doses required, we'll be able to have that capacity back in
Canada. But you know there are lots of people that say that actually that's not necessarily an accurate reflection. For example, the Prime Minister says we no longer have capacity to produce the vaccines, and I appreciate the AstraZeneca. But in Montreal, where your government invested in the National Research Center and in Saskatchewan, they would have, and I'm talking specifically about AstraZeneca because it doesn't require cold storage, and actually we have the technology to produce it. If your government had signed a licensing deal, the National Research Council in Montreal could have begun production now. You didn't need the AstraZeneca facility. That's the bottom line, because many of those other countries didn't have AstraZeneca facilities. They are just got the licensing agreement. So I'm just going to ask you specifically, why not sign a licensing agreement with that particular vaccine candidate so we could have a domestic supply?
So, Evan, a very good question. You're referring to the National Research Council's Royal Mount facility in Montreal. The Prime Minister announced at the end of the summer in August a very significant investment to expand, literally construct next to the existing Royal Mount facility, that biomanufacturing capacity, so that we would be able to produce domestic supplies of these vaccines. But it's simply not true to pretend that we could flick a switch and that facility in any significant way could produce right now enough vaccines that would be able to vaccinate Canadians. If you're talking about a few thousand for some clinical trial, that will not immunize Canadians as successfully as our procurement strategy will, by aggressively getting, Evan, to the front of the line and bringing to Canada these vaccines when it's safe and approved to make them available to Canadians.
But we're not at the front of the line. The Prime Minister clearly indicated we're at the back of the line. So maybe you can...
Evan, hold on.
But the Prime Minister said... Just a second.
I don't think he said the back of the line, because there's access and there's distribution.
The Prime Minister said that we are going to have to wait until the companies that are producing these domestically are giving it first to their countries. The United States is saying they're going to start vaccinating December 11th. The UK, Germany, Australia, they are going to be vaccinating in December. I know we bought these, so just be transparent. When will Canadians begin our vaccination? December, January, February, March, when?
So, Evan, first of all, the vaccines, the countries you're referring to, have not yet approved in terms of a safe and effective use those vaccines. So those approvals are ongoing. So a lot of people are saying a certain date they'll be vaccinating, but they haven't yet given the approval. The regulatory authorities in those countries haven't given the approval. We think it's important that Canadians have confidence and the independent science and regulators study and approve the vaccines in a coherent and responsible way. That being said, once those approvals, which are ongoing, Health Canada is doing rolling approvals, work in terms of approvals with three of the leading manufacturers, AstraZeneca, Pfizer, and Moderna are currently going through advanced approvals with Health Canada. So what we've said is at the beginning of next year, in January of 2021, assuming those approvals are given, Evan, Canadians will be able to start being vaccinated. And to say that we're at the back of the line or behind a whole list of other countries, again, is very much exaggerated.
Okay, hold on.
The conservatives should be careful not to say that, Evan.
Okay, well, hold on a second. You're saying, this is interesting, you're saying that we all understand pending approval. And the issue for countries like the United States, the UK, India, Japan, Mexico, Brazil, they're saying, look, I'll give you an example on AstraZeneca. India's already producing millions of doses. The day they get approval, they will be able to begin vaccination on a mass level. I don't know if we are. But now you're saying, and this is important, you're saying if Health Canada approves a vaccine, that we could be getting vaccinations, we'll get those doses in January of 2021. That's what you just said. That's interesting. So that fast, we will be getting those doses. That could be great news.
But it will be great news, Evan. And that's why Canada has been very successful in preparing one of the most comprehensive portfolios of vaccines to make sure that Canadians, when it's safe, can have access to those vaccines. Now, we've said in the first quarter of next year, so starting in January, assuming that the approvals are in place, we will start to receive some of the doses that we have contractually obtained for Canadians. We've got over 400 million doses, Evan, under contract now.
Hold on, slow down.
Beginning of next year.
Minister, this is really critical. So if there's Health Canada has to approve it, we all accept that. There's no debate about that. Okay. What is the delay between when Health Canada actually approves the drug, the potential vaccine, whether it's Pfizer, Moderna, or AstraZeneca? What is now the lag? Because you said we'll start giving vaccines in January. That's different than in March, because months matter to businesses and to health. What is the lag between when Health Canada gives the guarantee, or the go-ahead, the green light, and actually when people get a needle in their arm? Is it the next day you will start distributing, or then do you have to wait to see how many doses you actually get delivered?
Well, there's a contract schedule that Canada has successfully negotiated with seven different companies, the three you just named, because they appear to be likely to be the first that will receive regulatory approval. Those vaccines will start arriving in January of next year and will ramp up over the coming months. And a number of other companies, we hope, will also have vaccines that will be approved. And those will continue to arrive in Canada and be distributed with provinces and territories over the coming months in 2021. Really? Evan, this has been clear from the beginning. Canada has, in fact, been criticized by some countries for having procured amongst the most significant number of doses of any country per capita.
I understand, but
we thought was important for Canadians.
But you know, listen, signing contracts and getting delivery is different. Just two very quick points, sir. You're guaranteeing that some, pending approval, you would guarantee that some people will get vaccinated in January. Is there any reason why your government is not transparent on the number of doses we're going to receive? Like, are we going to get 80,000 doses or 6 million doses?
But again, Evan, that is subject to the contracts that we successfully negotiated with a whole series.
What do the contracts say? Why can't we just know what the contracts say? That's all I'm saying. So other countries are delighted to tell us what the contracts say.
So, Evan, we will start to receive the first millions of doses in the early part of 2021 if the vaccines are approved for use in Canada. Those contracts are in place, and that distribution will be made very effectively with provinces and territories. And Canadians need to know that the government of Canada has been very effective in ensuring that we have timely access to safe and effective vaccines.
All right. Interesting. Well, we hope. Listen, nobody wants this to be delayed at all. Dominic LeBlanc, Mr. LeBlanc, always good to have you on the show. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Evan.
All right, we heard from Dominic LeBlanc. That's the government's position. Let's get reaction from the opposition health critics. Michelle Rempel-Garner is the Conservatives' health critic. Don Davies is the NDP's health critic. Good to have both of you on. You both listened to that interview. I'll start with you, Michelle Rempel-Garner. As you heard, Mr. LeBlanc, the Prime Minister, said, look, we just simply did not have the capacity to produce vaccines domestically in any material way, even for the AstraZeneca. That's why they didn't apparently sign any licensing deals to do so. What do you make of that?
But he didn't answer your question. They didn't get that capacity to manufacture at home. So, you know, you'll notice that the minister said, well, in the future, you know, if we need multiple doses, we could manufacture it here. But that's not true if we don't have the right to manufacture it. It was actually Dawn who asked this question to health officials on Friday. And the quote that they said was that our relationships with them, the pharmaceutical companies, are to procure their vaccines, not to manufacture them. So we don't have that capacity. And then the minister was also not right with regard to the amount of vaccines that we're saying that we're probably going to get. The health officials under pressure on Friday so that at best there could be approximately 6 million doses by the end of March. And this does put us behind most of the world. I mean, I'm just looking at news that's saying that there's 27 European nations that could start vaccinations before Christmas. And we don't even have a plan from the federal government on how they're going to distribute the vaccines. We don't know who's getting them first, if they have enough medical equipment in order to deliver it. We've talked to pharmacist associations. They haven't been talked to about potentially using pharmacies to distribute this, or depending on what the vaccine is. We don't know if the freezers that are needed are going to be in place in time. So I think it's very right for Canadians to be expecting more. And what we're hearing from the government is talking points like they have a portfolio of vaccines, or, you know, just that very high-level message. We don't have the details, and I don't think they have them either.
All right, let me go to Don Davies. Look, we know they've put money down, their chips on the table on seven different vaccines. I get it. That's true. Per capita, if they all come through, that would be a lot. That's not what the questions are about, Don Davies. The questions are about when we're going to get the vaccine. And what do you make of the fact that the Prime Minister is saying, we don't have domestic production, but we hope we get them in the new year and we're doing all right? What questions do you have, sir?
Well, I've got a lot, but let me first start off by saying that, I'm actually stunned to hear the position of the Prime Minister and of Dominic LeBlanc. I mean, I think the words that come to mind when I look at the way the Liberals have handled vaccine development and negotiation, it's incompetence, it's confusion, and it's deception. I mean, yeah. August 31, the Prime Minister, the PMO, issued a press release that said that they were going to be providing money so that we would be in a position to be producing 250,000 doses of vaccine this November and up to 2 million doses per month by the end of this year. That's what the Prime Minister said would be the case. Here we are in November, and now he says, complete turnabout, 180-degree about face, that we don't have the capacity to produce vaccines. Now, he also says the obvious conclusion to that, and this is the worst part, is that Canadians now will have to wait, because he pointed out, quite rightfully, that places like Germany, the US, the UK, who do have the ability to produce vaccines in their countries, will accelerate access to the vaccines for their population, and Canadians will have to wait. Now, this is shocking, and as Michelle pointed out, the Liberals didn't admit this. We had to doggedly pursue this as they evaded the fact that this government neglected to negotiate in all seven contracts the right for Canada to domestically produce vaccines. Brazil did, Japan did, Australia did, India did, even Putin's Russia did.
Yeah.
And I think...
Okay, but John, can I just clarify that?
I just want to say this quickly, Evan. I don't think it's a problem of capacity in Canada. I think we have the technology and the scientists to produce. Yeah. I think we're covering up the fact that they botched this and we failed to negotiate the right to produce in Canada, and that's what they're trying to cover up.
Yeah.
All right. Don Davis, let me just stay with you, and then I'll get Michelle Rempel-Garner's position on that. Because I pressed Minister Dominic LeBlanc, who's just heard on that, and I think this is important. Even experts say that even Canada may not have had the capacity to produce the kind of vaccines that Pfizer and Moderna are trying to bring online. But they certainly, apparently, according to some experts, would have had the capacity here, even at, as you say, when the government of Canada announced the $44 million of funding at that NRC facility to upgrade the Human Health and Therapeutics Research Center there in August, and they put out a press release, as you said, that they would be able to produce 250,000 doses per month by November 2020. That would only work for the AstraZeneca. Do you think that that licensing deals should have been made on all these drugs, even if we didn't have the capacity, or just ones like AstraZeneca?
Well, of course they should. And Brazil negotiated with AstraZeneca to domestically produce that vaccine in Brazil. Why didn't Canada? And by the way, that NRC lab in Montreal, I'm told, did produce a vaccine that uses similar technology to AstraZeneca last year. Now, it was for a rabies vaccine. So, I mean, believe the Prime Minister in August or do you believe him in November? Because he's completely contradicting himself. Bottom line, the sad part here is Canadians are going to have delay in our access to vaccines. And it's because of botched negotiation by the Liberals. And that didn't need to be the case because other countries have done it. And it's not enough just to keep saying, oh, we've got the most vaccines per capita or the best portfolio. Word salad, to use Michelle's great phrase. You know, they're just talking about this, it's talking points and spin and covering up a shocking display of incompetence.
Yeah.
Okay, Michelle Rempel, just last word to you then. Again, Dominic LeBlanc, the Prime Minister, saying, look, Dominic LeBlanc literally just said to me, if Health Canada approves this, Canadians will start getting at the earliest vaccine doses based on these contracts, which we haven't seen granted, by January. What do you say to that?
That's not going to happen because there's no publicly available detail or evidence that that is going to happen. That's just the reality that I think many Canadians are going to have to accept, unfortunately, under this government. What Canadians who are watching this need to know is what the Liberals have failed to do, what Don was talking about, the fact that we don't have the right to produce those vaccines in Canada. It means that, like, if we need two doses or more doses, or it doesn't give complete immunity, or there's a better candidate or something down the road, that we don't even have the right to produce it at home. So it's like what Canadians need to understand is that what the Liberal government has done is just put us at the back of the queue, because any other country that has the right to produce this or the capacity to produce this is going to produce for their population first. So if they were talking about bolstering manufacturing supply, they needed to have the right to manufacture here. And as
the licensing agreement
finally dug this out of them, that they didn't do that. They should be producing evidence to the contrary, but I don't think that that exists.
Kevin, can I just say
this is a big story, obviously.
Another important point is we've been on the health committee. I'm sorry. At Health Committee this week, I just want to say that they confirmed maximum doses to Canada by March 31st will be 6 million. So at two doses, that's less than 8% of the population maybe will be able to be vaccinated by the end of March.
Maybe.
By end of March. We'll have to see what these other countries are going to do. Guys, let me just leave it there. This is not a conversation that we're going to end. We'll continue to talk about this. Michelle Rempel-Garner and Don Davies, great to have you on the program. So now you've seen the government side, folks, and you've also seen the opposition side. Meantime, we've got some breaking news out of the United States. President Donald Trump has just pardoned his former national security advisor, Michael Flynn. Donald Trump announced the news on Twitter, saying that Flynn will now truly have a fantastic Thanksgiving. Remember, Flynn was President Trump's first national security advisor. He pleaded guilty in 2017 to lying to the FBI. Then he tried to disavow that plea. Trump has granted pardons throughout his presidency at the urging of friends, Fox News personalities, and Hollywood celebrities earlier this year. The president commuted the sentence of his longtime confidant, Roger Stone. So we'll find out if more pardons are coming. Coming up, a damning report on Ontario's pandemic response sparks a backlash from Premier Doug Ford. Check this out.
There's a big problem with an accountant that starts giving me health advice.
Did the Auditor General's report overstep the mark? Was she really inaccurate? Well, guess what? She joins us. The Ontario Auditor General, Bonnie Lissick, will defend her report next. Stay right here on Power Play.
To sit in the office and throw hand grenades at Dr. Williams and his team and the Minister of Health is totally unacceptable. Totally unacceptable. Stick with looking for value for money. Stick with the job that we hired you for. Don't start pretending you're a doctor or a health professional, because I can tell you, you aren't. Stick with the numbers. Stick with the number crunching.
I haven't seen that before. Ontario Premier Doug Ford, not just hitting back hard, slamming the Auditor General of Ontario's report into the province's COVID-19 response. He says the report is riddled with inaccuracies. First, he said there's 20 pages of inaccuracies. Actually, they responded with a 20-page report, not 20 pages of inaccuracies in the 230-odd page report. But what was actually inaccurate? Are there, quote, hand grenades or just facts? The scathing report from Ontario's Auditor General found Ontario's response was confusing, delayed, that it had cumbersome leadership table, was slow on key responses. So what's wrong with it? Let's get details from the person who wrote it, the Ontario Auditor General herself, Bonnie Lissick. Always good to have you on the program. Before I get to your reaction to his response, but the government, Christine Elliott and the Premier said it's riddled with errors. They've written a 20-page report. Tell us first what you found. Let's start from your end. What was delayed? What was confusing?
Yeah, I think what we saw is, there's a history of issues with respect to the public health IT systems, the lab systems, the lack of capacity in the labs, emergency measure plans, management plans not being updated. So we reported that these were situations that had to be addressed during the course of COVID. And we had recommendations in the report to kind of continue to move us forward, improve on those systems so that the lab testing can go faster, so case management can go faster, and so tracing can go faster. So the report is really produced with the intent of providing content on what's happened to date and recommendations going forward. And,
I spoke to the health minister today, Christine Elliott. One of the things you say in your report is Ontario was reactive and late to respond. She said that's absolutely untrue. Give me some examples where Ontario was late in their response to COVID.
There would be a situation where Ontario was discouraging testing for most travelers other than people coming in from China. other provinces were testing more people right at the beginning that were traveling into their jurisdictions from countries that COVID had been spreading to. There was a delay in communication around community transmission in Ontario. There was a delay in restricting long-term care home staff from working in different multiple locations. So in BC, they ordered that stop on March 27th. In Ontario, it was April 14th.
Okay, there's one example. You called the health COVID table that was supposed to coordinate it cumbersome, and that Dr. Williams was barely involved in it, wasn't even at that table. Can you explain what you meant by that?
Yeah, so the health command table is really an advisory body. And so it's chaired by the Deputy Minister of Health with the co-chair of the CEO of Ontario Health, and the CMO was a member, never chaired it, wasn't documented to be a chair of that group. And that committee provided advice to the command table that then provided advice to the coordination table, I'm sorry, that provided advice to the Premier and Cabinet. And so Public Health was also a member on that committee, but they had so many people involved that during the beginnings of COVID, all the meetings were held on teleconference. And, we heard from people that participated that it was hard to know how the decisions were being made, whether it was based on who spoke the loudest, whether it was based on somebody that had expert experience. And I think the thing to think about in terms of our report, it really is pulling together all the comments that we heard during the course of our audit, documentation reviewed, and it's really reflective of the response from the people that participated over the last number of months in addressing issues.
Bonnie Lissick, I'm going to have to go to Alberta for a minute, but I just need this on the record. They say it's inaccurate, and they say you're way over your remit, that you should stick to doing value for money audits. Quick response to the Premier.
These are value for money audits, and we are pointing areas for improvement, and we did double check for factual accuracy, and I stand behind the reports and my team's work, and I hope the reports are looked at positively going forward and there's recommendations there that will be implemented. We had support of Secretary of Cabinet and the Ministry, and I look forward to seeing positive changes going forward.
I wish we could go longer, but we are obliged to go to all these live press conferences. Bonnie Lissick, the Auditor General of Ontario, I appreciate that. Let's go to Alberta, where they have a big COVID crisis. Here's Dr. Dina Hensha, their chief medical officer, with the latest.
Actions in place. I hope that everyone still seeks support, comfort, and help in ways that are also safe from COVID transmission risk. The daily rise in COVID-19 cases, as well as the growing number and extent of outbreaks in acute care facilities across the province, continues to be concerning. Healthcare teams are working tirelessly to ensure patients and staff remain safe, but we must do all we can to protect the patients in all of our care, which is why Alberta Health Services has been taking and continues to take steps to increase capacity in the system. In the coming weeks, they plan to make available more than 2,000 acute care beds and up to 400 ICU beds to be allocated for patients with COVID-19 across the province if they are needed. In some cases, these will be new beds. In other cases, these beds are existing hospital spaces that will be made available as patients are moved into continuing care beds in the community. To make this space available, AHS will be taking a variety of steps. This includes transferring patients out of acute care to continuing care wherever possible and safe, moving patients to available beds that are open in other parts of the province, repurposing other clinical areas to provide ICU care, and if needed, reducing additional non-urgent surgeries. These steps are being taken to make sure that there is sufficient capacity to meet the growing healthcare need. In order to allocate these acute and ICU beds, AHS will also be working with Alberta Health, continuing care operators, and other partners to open additional continuing care beds in the community. AHS will provide more specific information on changes as they are implemented in the days ahead. Effective today, AHS is also changing visitor access to acute care sites that are on outbreak or in communities that are under enhanced status. For patients admitted to hospital and in ambulatory care, including emergency departments, only one designated family or support person is permitted under specific circumstances. For maternity and postpartum units, one designated family or support person will be permitted. A doula or surrogate may also be permitted. For pediatrics and NICU, as well as critical care, up to two designated family or support persons are permitted. In end-of-life situations, one designated family or support person is permitted, and the presence of any other visitors must be pre-arranged with the site or unit. The extent of restrictions may vary site to site due to patient circumstances, operational considerations, and the ability to maintain physical distancing. To be clear, these changes are for sites that are on outbreak or in a community where COVID-19 transmission is high. Details about visitor policies in individual sites can be found on the AHS website. We recognize that these restrictions are very difficult for patients, families, loved ones, staff, and physicians. But these temporary measures are being implemented to help reduce exposure and spread of the virus in AHS facilities. My health colleagues will continue work with patients, families, and healthcare teams to support visitation appropriate to the ongoing pandemic situation in our province. Turning to schools, there are currently active alerts or outbreaks in 348 schools, about 15% of schools in Alberta. Currently, these schools have a combined total of 1,207 active cases. This number includes 179 schools with outbreaks, including 71 currently on the watch list. My thanks go out to all the many people who are working so hard to keep students, teachers, staff, and families safe. Thank you to parents and guardians who are teaching good pandemic hygiene at home and reinforcing the importance of compliance with measures at school. I know that there has been a burden on parents this year to keep kids home even with mild illness and to arrange for kids to stay home if an exposure has taken place in their class. Thank you to students who have adapted to new routines and habits to prevent transmission and to keep their school and their community safe. Thank you to teachers and school staff who are on the front line of preventing the spread among students. We appreciate everything that you do. I would especially like to recognize those in the grade 7 to 12 system.
All right, that's the latest update from Alberta, where yesterday, as we know, the premier there announced some new restrictions, more of a patchwork of new restrictions. Some wanted him to go a lot further. He didn't. We'll see the results of that. Every province in this patchwork across is making decisions, as we'll talk about later in our program. But we got some sad news to report to you now. Quebec's longest-serving justice minister, Marc-André Bédard, has died of complications from COVID-19. He was 85 years old. Bédard was a René Lévesque loyalist who served as justice minister from 1976 to 1985. He was also the deputy premier in 1984. His career was marked by major reforms, including human rights amendments to protect LGBTQ Quebecers. So as you heard earlier in the program from the government and opposition, the opposition thinks the government might not be forthcoming, as it should be when it comes to vaccine production on Canadian soil. Canada has some vaccine manufacturing facilities in Montreal, in Saskatchewan. They are smaller than their international comparisons, but some experts say they had been bolstered 8 months ago, and they should be able to have been used to produce some manufacturing of some vaccines. For example, Mexico and Australia got licenses from companies like AstraZeneca to produce a vaccine there if that vaccine gets the green light. Did Ottawa get licensing agreements? Should Ottawa, and does Canada, and should Canada have the capacity to at least produce some of them? Let's bring in the press gallery. Steph Levitz is a reporter with the Canadian Press. Robert Benzie is the Toronto Star's Queen's Park Bureau Chief. A lot of news there with the Auditor General and the Premier. We'll pick that up with Ben's and Amir Adaran. Now, Amir Adaran is a professor at the University of Ottawa with the School of Public Health and the Faculty of Law. And he wrote an article months ago warning Canada that we better start getting licensing agreements to produce some vaccines. Now he says they didn't listen. So I'm going to start with you, Mr. Adaran, because you wrote to the Prime Minister's office. You wrote an article in Maclean's magazine. When the Prime Minister says now, look, we've got seven vaccines that we've ordered. We just don't have the facilities to produce a vaccine domestically. Is he right?
He is wrong. And he should know he's wrong because he actually visited the vaccine factory that the government of Canada owns in Montreal a few months ago and made an announcement there. He personally went to the factory. That factory at the National Research Council does have the ability to make one of the vaccines, the one from AstraZeneca. And it is a cutting-edge facility. It actually is the first lab in the world ever to have made a vaccine using the technology that AstraZeneca uses. That was for a rabies vaccine for wild animals, but the technology is the same. Canada was, last year, the only country in the world making this kind of vaccine. And now the Prime Minister is saying we can't do it? It's completely nonsense.
Okay, just quickly, I want to pick up. They released a press release during that visit, and I'll read it to our viewers again. In the spring of 2020, the press release said, the government of Canada announced $44 million in funding to allow the National Research Council to upgrade its facilities at the Human Health Therapeutics Research Center. And they say, quote, this will ensure the facility complies with good manufacturings to scale up production, and it will enable the preliminary production of 250,000 doses of vaccine per month starting in 2020. But I just talked to Dominic LeBlanc about that, the minister, Professor Adaran, and he said, you know what, that's being done, it's not ready, and it's way too limited. Again, what's your response to that?
That's rubbish. That's not true. I'll do the math for you. AstraZeneca, giant pharmaceutical company, has facilities to grow 8,000 liters of cells, 8,000 liters, out of which they can make 1 billion vaccine doses a year, they say. The National Research Council today, right now, has at least 500 liters capacity. If you scale it up, if you do the proportion, what do you get out of 500 liters? If you do it AstraZeneca's way, you get 60 million doses in a year. That's what could be done, or something close to it. And for the government to deny that fact is unscientific, wrong, and dangerous to Canadians.
Steph Levitz, what do you make of this? Are we at the back of the line? Because this is a health crisis, obviously, and an economic crisis, but it's now quickly becoming a very big political crisis for the government. What do you make of their defense of it and the opposition's concern that Canada, unlike many other countries, didn't sign licensing agreements to produce this stuff domestically?
No, based on what the minister told you, Evan, what we're hearing is that none is better than some when it comes to the production of vaccines within Canada. So what if our facility can't spool up a vaccine for every single Canadian, even though the statistics Amir just showed suggest they could? But why not just get going on the production of some? We have essential workers to vaccinate. We have vulnerable Canadians to vaccinate. Should we not be doing all we can to do all we can to make sure Canadians have this vaccine? And then the question then becomes, if the goal back in the spring was to scale up this facility, was to get these vaccines out the door, did something go wrong? Was the government lying to Canadians? Which is it? And they owe people an answer.
Robert Benzi, again, Justin Trudeau said, don't worry, we're going to get them in the first quarter as soon as we got these contracts. We haven't seen these contracts. We don't know the number of doses. There's a lot of lack of transparency here. Nonetheless, he says, look, we just could not, we don't have domestic production. That's the end of that. What's your take on that, Robert Benzi?
You know what, Evan, we all saw Professor Adaran's article in Maclean's earlier this year. And I think a lot of people living in a first world country like Canada assumed, obviously wrongly, that we would be among the first in line for vaccines because we have a pretty big domestic pharmaceutical industry with international players who have offices and operations in Ontario, in Canada. And so I think a lot of people are feeling a little bit blindsided by the prime minister's admission that we may not be at the front of the line because we haven't signed these contracts. It's an appalling slip if indeed this is what happened.
Okay, so Amir Adaran, the prime minister then read, AstraZeneca, they closed down their facility in 2007. Johnson & Johnson closed down theirs. Pfizer moved their out. The Mulroney government privatized the Connaught Labs. There's this long history. I don't want to get into the pharmaceutical history of Canada, but has that meant that we basically have no capacity left, sir?
We do have the capacity at the NRC, and there is another big vaccine factory in Quebec City owned by GlaxoSmithKline, although unfortunately it doesn't specialize in making the sort of vaccine we need for COVID. No doubt, though, Evan, your point is well taken. This country is, and I'm sorry to say it, quite technologically backwards in pharmaceuticals. And this is something the successive governments have let happen. It's not just pharmaceuticals. You'll remember in the spring, we couldn't even get enough masks. Little paper and plastic masks were outside of our technological ken when we needed them the most. We have never had a national strategic approach to pandemic preparedness in this country, and that is something I've warned about, at least 13 years ago, 14 years ago that I can recall writing about it. And it's got
okay,
to be.
Okay, so just real, I just got a minute here. From your point of view, Amir Adaran, when do you think then Canadians will get a vaccine, the needle in their arms, compared to, I don't know, the UK, Germany, or the United States?
There isn't the transparency out of this government for me to say, Evan. I could give you a guess, but it would be only a guess, and I probably shouldn't do that. What Health Canada told Parliament quite recently is that they expected to receive 6 million doses by March. Now, 6 million doses would vaccinate 3 million people if you don't waste any. That means 10% of the Canadian population by March. And it's heartbreaking.
Steph, do you want to weigh in on, does this pose, if that happens, if Canadians start seeing Americans getting needles or vaccines or the Brits, does that become a major political problem for Justin Trudeau?
Of course it does, because as the opposition, I think, rightfully pointed out today, the vaccine, the need for a vaccine, the search for a vaccine, that was on everybody's minds off the top of this pandemic as the only way through this pandemic. So the idea that the government wasn't rushing madly at that point, and I know they'll say we secured all sorts of doses, we have all sorts of doses, but to make sure at that point the Canadians were going to get those as fast as they humanly could, I mean, that is my response, Evan. Like, come on, you guys.
All right, guys, I got to take a break. I think the frustration may build on this. Amir Adaran, listen, I really appreciate it, folks. Check out his article in Maclean's. It's one of those articles that saw this coming. That's Amir Adaran. Benz and Steph, stick with us. Benz, I really want to get your view on what the Auditor General's report and how it landed in Ontario, and the Premier pushing back, saying it's full of inaccuracies. But look, there's a month to go before Christmas, and Ontario is asking for, virtual celebrations? Quebec has issued a moral contract so you can have some contact. Who's getting it right? So we'll come back with that and the AG's report. Tom Mulcair will jump on the press gallery. Lots to come. Stay with us. Welcome back to the program. So, the Auditor General of Ontario says that the Ontario response was confusing and delayed. Doug Ford said that report is riddled with inaccuracy. Meantime, we're 2 weeks away from Hanukkah, a month away from Christmas. Ontario and Quebec have each issued two totally different kind of guidelines as to what you should do in Ontario. Don't gather in Quebec. There's a social contract. Who's got it right? Well, let's bring back the press gallery. Steph Levitz with the Canadian Press, Robert Benzie with the Queen's Park Bureau Chief for the Star, and Tom Mulcair, our CTV News political analyst, among his many hats that he's worn. Great to have you on the show, Tom. Let me just quickly pick up with Robert Benzie, because you've had your nose in this thing all day. What do you make of the Auditor General's report and how the Premier of Ontario slammed back, saying she's way outside the chalk lines on this?
Yeah, I was surprised at how upset the Premier was at Bonnie Lissick's report. but he's not wrong in the sense that there are some problems with that report. There are some assertions that she makes in there that just aren't borne out by other evidence. For example, Evan, she talks about how British Columbia is this great example, and then castigates Ontario for not moving faster on a mask mandate, even though Ontario's mask mandate is ahead of British Columbia's. British Columbia still doesn't have the COVID alert app that Ontario adopted very early. And British Columbia has actually a higher per capita infection rate right now than Ontario. So there were certain things that clearly bothered the premier. One of the things that I was personally surprised about was that she does this hundreds of pages of auditing of COVID expenses and COVID spending. And we have a story on the front page of the Star today about an $11 million alleged fraud involving absconded COVID-19 funds that were supposed to go to families earlier this year. And that's not mentioned in the report. So it's kind of a sin of omission. Now, she said that she's going to have other reports, and presumably she will. But it was one of those things that I think that twigged the premier when he said, look, stick to your brief, stick to the accounting, stick to your numbers, and leave the public health advice to the public health officials like Dr. David Williams, the chief medical officer of health.
But let me bring in Tom Mulcaire on this. Look, nobody's going to handle this perfectly. There's no perfect response. But it was interesting to see Bonnie Lissick saying there was delay, confusion, cumbersome decision-making in Ontario. But in Quebec, it hasn't been much different. How do we calibrate who's getting this right with the holidays coming? And I don't know, both those provinces seem to be veering off in totally opposite directions, Tom.
Very well said. And I have to say that I found it quite refreshing to hear a provincial premier just react the way Premier Ford did today. And I can't say that he's completely wrong for the reasons that Robert Menzies just gave, but also it's clearly very political what she did. If you want to be a politician, get elected. But if you want to be the Auditor General, stay above the fray. And that's what's missing here. You know, I've done both. I've been a senior politician and a senior civil servant, not the same job. And she seems to be mixing the two of them up. Quebec has not even begun looking at this thing. Mr. Legault has asked one of his employees to do a report to him. Good luck with that. Once the dust settles on this thing, 6-8 months from now, there will be royal commissions of inquiry in almost every province. We're not there yet. I think that this was a singularly bad form by the Auditor General of Ontario.
Steph, what do you make of, let's just move to the two different madly off in all directions. How do Canadians figure this out? In Ontario, you can't have Christmas or the holiday season with your family. Just stick to your household. A couple of exceptions. In Quebec, there's a social contract. Obviously, the virus doesn't give a crap what province you live in. How do Canadians figure this out?
I mean, go back to the premise of your question, Evan, like off the top to Tom. What does getting it right look like? When we talk about who is getting it right, who has the right answer, there's 1,000 metrics that go into evaluating COVID-19 response in this country. Do we look at deaths? Do we look at hospitalizations? Do we look at increased rates of transmission among the vulnerable versus increased rates of transmission, say, in schools? I mean, I would think that the general rule of thumb here is let's keep the transmissions low. Let's, to borrow the expression from the public health folks, plank the curve, crush the curve, do whatever it is you want to do to the curve, but just don't let it go up. And, you know, as we've talked about, that there's a balance here between what the government can mandate and what people have to take as their personal responsibility. And I think what's the most frustrating for a lot of people is, let's say, in this great country, we all have family that live in different parts of this country. And so, you know, I could travel to Quebec and, you know, I don't celebrate Christmas, but if I did, maybe spend Christmas with my family there, but they can't come see me for Hanukkah here in Ontario. And it's very confusing. And this is where, you know, the calls that come from the Green Party, among others, for some national coordination here, just on messaging, just to give Canadians a simple framework to follow, I think that would be really welcome because it is confusing and it is exceptionally stressful.
Tom, how does Quebec justify the moral contract?
Boy, that one, they're already walking that one back. Last Thursday, they announced that for the 24th, 25th, 26th, 27th, you could have family parties with no more than 10 people. And then yesterday they said, oh, what we meant to say is you can have any two of those 4 days. And at the end of the day, our public health rep, whose name is Dr. Arruda, was saying, by the way, all of this is dependent on whether or not the numbers actually start to go down. It's Quebec numbers, especially our deaths, to go in through the litany that was just put out by Stephanie. Our deaths are just the worst in Canada by far. Nobody's even, we're heading to 7,000 deaths overall by the end of this month. It's you know, it's mind-boggling. So what they're going to probably wind up doing is saying you can have one party. I can't see them going lower than that because then people will really lose it. But this whole idea of having...
guys, unfortunately, we're going to have to pick it up tomorrow. Tom, Benz, and Steph, I got to go. We'll be back tomorrow. Thanks for watching, everyone.